This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Final hour of power coming up here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. It's the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. Right now, we go back out to the guest hotline. We find our pal Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1 on our sister station, the Team 980. What's going on, Kev? How you doing, brother?
Linnell, what's up?
I'm good, but I don't know how good I'm going to be. What's going on with Kevin Willard in the Terps, man? Obviously, they got the Sweet 16 game tomorrow, but you had him on earlier today, I believe. I was all ears and loved the question. Or yesterday, so I love the question. Getting straight to it, will you be sticking around here? And from your vibe and what you know about the situation, how realistic of a possibility is it that they actually lose him?
Oh, it's very realistic. I mean, you got people out there right now. I don't know if there's any super credible reports at this point, but yeah, it's the tea leaves are not, you know, sort of blowing in the right direction if you want Kevin Willard to stay, which I do.
How could you not? Yeah. Wow.
And so we'll see. I mean, I've been mentioning this like seemingly all day, Linnell, but it's like every few hours you talk to says, oh, no, he's staying. And then that same person an hour later, he's gone. You know, I don't know what to believe at this point. I would certainly say that the fact that the university, which I believe has kind of ponied up and said, whatever you need, we're going to get you. And we have not had sort of any kind of press release or announcement, you know, from the school or from Kevin Willard so that they can, you know, get everybody to stop hovering on this story and focus on the game tomorrow. The fact that we haven't gotten that is not a good sign, I don't think. So we'll see.
What does this situation say about the not just the state of the basketball program, but the state of the athletic department at the university?
I think there have been challenges for the basketball program and the basketball coaches going back many years now. You know, even going back to even Biao, and that was when the team and the school was in the ACC, and football wasn't generating anywhere near what it generates now. Maryland being in the Big Ten, football program is not, you know, a massive producer in terms of wins or fans in the stands. You know, Maryland is a basketball first school. I mean, I love football. I love Maryland football. I root for Maryland football, and everybody does, but it tends to be more of an icing on the cake situation when they're good. But because of the football program being in the Big Ten, they get a massive cut of that TV deal.
Yeah.
And everything, you know, the university itself has benefited significantly by being in the Big Ten. And so, you know, in this new era of rep share, you know, at a school which is unique in the Big Ten, Indiana would be the other one where basketball is the preference of alums and of fans. That's where the passion resides. You know, you've got coaches that want a bigger piece of the pie than maybe some of the other places get. And I think it's been a challenge with athletic directors and administratively for coaches for years.
So with this situation specifically with Willard, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it's not really about annual salary for him. It's about what the athletic department's willing to commit to the program so that they can continue to be a perennial powerhouse, or turn themselves into, rather, a perennial powerhouse. Am I reading the situation right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on here, I think. But I think ultimately at the core of everything, with Kevin, with Mark Turgeon before, even going back to Gary at times with Debbie Yao, I think what the basketball program is to most people viewing it from the outside hasn't been as clean inside. You know, there's been more of fights and struggles for the basketball, you know, program to get what they need to compete at the super highest levels of the game. And look, we're in a completely different era now, obviously. Right. Transfer portal and NIL. Now you're just, you know, looking to be able to compete with the upper echelons in terms of paying players. And look, it's great to be in the Big Ten because of the money. Maryland's NIL has not been, you know, at the highest levels of the conference, you know, for basketball, football, whatever it is. Yeah, well, it's, I think it just stinks that this is happening now, right, on the eve, if it does happen, on the eve of the biggest game they've had in 9 years.
It's going to be tough tomorrow. They're in action, the 4-seed Terps against the 1-seed Florida Gators. Florida, obviously, a juggernaut all year long, and that loaded SEC, historically good this year. I think what it comes down to tomorrow, Kevin, is can Derek Queen be the best player on the floor? We know Walter Clayton Jr., just an absolute bucket getter. He was all onions this past weekend, knocking down big shots in crunch time for the Gators. When you look at the matchup in the front court, Queen and Reese versus the bigs of Florida, Condon and company, what type of chance do you give them to kind of control that matchup?
I think Maryland, just big picture, if they play the way they're capable of playing and have played in many games this year, they can definitely win this game. But I think the key is rebounding, number one. Maryland has gotten killed on the offensive glass in their last three games. Florida's one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. You know, when you look at Florida statistically, it's not like they shoot lights out from behind the arc, right, you know, overall, but it's been the second and third chances that they've gotten with their offensive rebounding capability. Maryland can't give up 12, 13, 14, 15 offensive rebounds and expect to win tomorrow night. I think that's where it starts, which, Liddell, you understand that means, too, that they like to switch 1 through 5 defensively.
Right.
You probably can't do that as much if you're going to get killed on the glass with, you know, smaller guys guarding big guys after, you know, after switches. So, you know, the way they defend Florida and then the way they rebound, I think, is the key to the game. You can't turn it over against Florida, but Maryland hasn't really had a turnover problem at all. I think if they rebound, they can absolutely keep up the pace of, you know, scoring 80-plus and being right there with a chance to win the game, because they've got five dudes that can go for 20 or more. And you get two or three of them that have, you know, even if you get two guys that are off, they got three other guys that can go off. So I'm not concerned about their ability to keep pace scoring. My concern is, can they, after getting stops, get rebounds?
It's going to be huge. Goes back to their senior, Julian Reese. I was really impressed with him over the weekend, knowing how much time and effort he's put in at the free throw line to then make key big free throws to steal a W It was absolutely huge. But his running mate in the front court, Derek Queen, Kevin, is special. You've obviously followed this program a very long time. When was the last time they had a star-studded freshman like this, and how would you compare him to some of the all-time great Terps in their freshman campaign?
Well, Mello Trimble was the last one who had an incredible freshman year, but yeah. The comparison is to Joe Smith's freshman year in 94. Yeah. And Joe got Maryland to the Sweet 16. They lost to what was remaining of the Fab Five, everybody but Weber, who had gone. So Juwan Howard, Jalen Rose, Jimmy King, all those guys were a part of that Michigan team that beat Maryland in the Sweet 16. Joe Smith had a phenomenal freshman year. He was the freshman of the year in and Derek Queen's right there. Yeah. Smith and Derek Queen's got a legendary moment that yes. No one will ever forget. It'll live forever. And in Maryland basketball fans' minds in history, the shot to beat Colorado State to get into the Sweet 16. And, you know, who knows what happens tomorrow night and beyond. There could be more of those memories. Look, if he's the, you know, if he leads them to a win tomorrow night, he got them a step further than Joe Smith did as a freshman. And I think if they win tomorrow night, Linnell, they'll be favored in their Elite Eight game.
Yeah, I would have to think. Real quick here, we got to let you go. I'm killing the clock terribly. Got the chance to talk to Cam Ward tonight live in studio. The kid
Largo?
From Largo, yeah, man. Just impressive young man.
I thought you were going to say quarterback Cam Ward, but yeah.
No. The young pup from Largo, man, just a super impressive young man. He's going to give the Terps hell over the next couple of years while he's down to Sparty. Knowing what you know about the high school basketball scene, am I hyperbolizing it, Kev? Like, I called him the greatest public school player of all time when you got the scoring record now.
Ooh.
That's tough. I know it's controversial.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that. I'd have to think about that because, you know, you guys like, you know, that played at DC public schools, Dunbar, McKinley Tech. I mean, we got a bunch of them. I mean, Elgin Baylor is the all-time greatest public school player in the history of the city. That's the answer. Nobody's close. Elgin Baylor is the greatest player, high school player in the history of the city. Public, you know, private, Catholic, doesn't matter.
Sure.
That's the answer to the question.
For sure. Kev, I appreciate you giving us some time as always. My brother will be tuned in tomorrow morning.
All right, Linnell, take care.
That is Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show, weekdays 10 to 1 on our sister station, the Team 980. We'll take a quick timeout when we come back. What the hell are the New York Giants doing at the quarterback position? We'll chew on that next on the Fan.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wanted to get into some of the foes of the NFC East here real quick, specifically the New York Giants, and we had Ryan Fowler on. He mentioned the possibility of Shedeur Sanders going there at number 3. What a quarterback room that would be. Russell Wilson. I almost forgot who the quarterbacks were. Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Shedeur Sanders? No way, right?
Can you imagine Russell Wilson doing high knees on the plane while Jameis is doing what Jameis is doing? Who knows?
It's all a mess. It's all a mess. I will say this, though. For the Giants, man, we've had some embarrassing times here in Washington. What the hell is going on right now in New York? Like, Mr. Mayor is going senile. Like, I can't rationalize any of the decisions they've made. Even down to, and Ryan Fowler was big up on him for, you know, I love the Paulson Adebo signing. Like, that's cool. But why throw Javon Holland in the bag and let Xavier McKinney walk the year before? That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of some of the moves that they've made. I think their offensive line still stinks. I think Russell Wilson is going to struggle to be protected. Having a receiver, though, like Malik Nabers, I guess boosts the ceiling of anybody. So, maybe, just maybe, that's able to work. The Giants are a dumpster fire, man. And I was like trying my hardest not to cringe when I got Ryan Fowler. I was like, yeah, the roster's not that bad. You better ask somebody. The receiving core's not bad. You could do a lot worse than Neighbors, Slayton, Wandale Robinson. And then Jalin Hyatt apparently got the text message from Russell Wilson that, hey, it's time to go, man. It's time to go. So, okay. I think their offensive line will be the downfall of this group. That's how I look at it. I like John Michael Schmitz. I think he's a nice young center. Evan Neal stinks. Don't try to sell me on him being a good football player. And Andrew Thomas, when he's healthy, is good, but last year couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when you draft Evan Neal as high as he was,
and
it didn't pan out. Because usually you draft a tackle high, you at least get a guy that can play. Like Eric Fisher,
yeah,
remember, he was a bust for number one overall.
But he
was still serviceable as an NFL player. Evan Neal's not.
He's unplayable.
Like, he's a top 10 pick that can't play.
And they tried to kick him inside the guard last year. First of all, he's a huge guard. But, like, didn't work for him there either. The most exciting part, I guess, about the Giants football team is what they have on defense, because they do. Javon Holland and Tyler Newbin is going to end up being a hell of a safety tandem. I liked their young cat, Trey Hawkins. He didn't get a lot of time last year. He got nicked up, but was a camp revelation for them. But then they're like the trio of pass rushers, or I guess it's almost a quartet, Burns, Thibodeau, Dexter Lawrence. Like, they got guys coming off the edge to have some juice. Curious to see where they go in the draft. I would be going, it's hard, because I guess you can, they look like, to me, wouldn't be a crazy team to go Will Campbell, depending on how things fall out in that top three. They don't need to go Travis Hunter. I wouldn't do that. Doesn't make sense for them. I think they need to add an offensive lineman. Like, that is their issue right now. Get a tackle opposite of Andrew Thomas that can be serviceable for you. I just don't buy the roster. I just don't buy the roster. It's just not a good enough group to me, especially in a competitive NFC East. And Russell Wilson, someone put it out earlier, this is what people do when guys sign free agent contracts. You, like, put out a cool stat that shows how well they've played. The last two seasons, Russell Wilson, 42 touchdowns, 13 picks combined. But quarterbacks are doing that in 1 year. Don't try to give me those stats over the span of 2 years and try and fluff it up. Russell did say that he expected to be the starter. That I have a problem with. Where's the competition here, Dabes? Why are you not making Russell compete with Jameis? Why are you giving Mr. Unlimited a job?
Well, I mean, it's not Dable saying he's a starter definitively.
Well, it's Russell saying it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't sign for
that.
But you don't sign for that amount of money, not expecting to be the starter.
Yeah, I think the Giants, it's like a bad game of musical chairs.
Emphasis on bad.
Yeah.
Everything in New York. Everything.
Emphasis on bad. Like, their options were kind of slim. But here's the thing, though. They didn't have to throw Russell Wilson in the bag. I guess they were kind of competing with Cleveland, because I know people think that Cleveland was in on him as well. I happen to think Cleveland's waiting the Kirk Cousins thing out. And by the way, now that we're on that, like, what the hell are Terry Fontenot and company doing down there in Atlanta? Get rid of Kirk Cousins. Like, why are you doing this dog and pony show? You're depriving yourself of assets, honestly, because you get some more draft capital, and Lord knows they need it. And I also just look at, like, I don't know. I think the Falcons fans are smart enough. I gotta tread lightly calling fans smart, right? But I look at Michael Penix as a type of cat where, like, if they start calling for Cousins if he plays bad, Penix isn't going to be fazed by that. He'll just change his do-rag color and keep it pushing. It's just what he does. But we'll see, though, man. Giants are going to be interesting. I actually hate the Giants because they deprived us and ruined the offseason Hard Knocks. I loved it. No team ever going to be willing to do that, though. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, Craig Hoffman joins the program next right here on The Fan. We'll talk all things burgundy and gold, including who Craig thinks could potentially replace Jeremy Chinn at the safety spot. That's next there on The Fan. Welcome back. It's overtime right here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app. It's the youngest of Charles and L. Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. Right now, I want to go back out to the guest hotline where we find our pal Craig Hoffman, the host of the Craig Hoffman Show weekdays 4 to 7 on the Team 980. He's also the co-host of the Take Command podcast with former Redskins tight end Logan Paul, so you can download that wherever you get your podcast. Always love that you make some time for us, Craig. I want to get right into it here.
I want to get into the burgundy and gold real quick. Off-season kind of hitting that low point as we kind of transition, Craig, our focus to the NFL draft. I want to get to the move that they made Thursday. I was actually asleep, Craig, when it happened. It's a shocker for me. I'm never asleep when things like this break, but my schedule calls me to get some daytime Z's. Michael Gallup brought in, obviously familiarity with him and DQ with the Cowboys. I remember when Gallup was slated to be a free agent, Craig. I don't know if you remember this either. Like, there was a rumor that Washington was going to throw a pretty significant bag his way to get him to leave Dallas. His best season was his second year in the NFL, 1,100 yards, 66 catches, 17 yards per reception to go along with 6 touchdowns. He was pretty honest when the local media spoke to him about why he chose to hang it up. I get it. I just hope he's well. What can he potentially bring to this group if he's right?
I mean, if he's all the way right, he's the speed receiver that they haven't had opposite of, or that they want opposite of Terry, right? Yeah. He's the good version of what we got in the playoffs of De'Ami Brown. He's that guy all the time, the deep threat. And I just remember one of the catches that De'Ami had in the NFC Championship game where he and Terry run these big high crossers and they basically make a giant X over the field. And the speed at which it happens, because both guys were 4.3, in De'Ami's case 4.45 fast, was just like, it's a nightmare for a defense. It's just so hard to deal with guys crossing each other and some of the stuff that Cliff does when it's happening that fast. And so if Gallup is healthy in all of the ways and he's that guy, like the dude who averages 17 yards a catch, he's a vertical threat down the field. He's, you know, 1,100 yards and 66 catches. It's crazy, crazy in terms of the explosiveness. And they need that explosive element. There's also a chance he doesn't make the team. Right. And so I know that everyone's doing a million radio segments on it, and I understand we're in the middle of March, and there's only so much to talk about. He is a fairly big name because he played for the Cowboys and had that one really big season. But I think we're at the point, too, Linnell, with a lot of these guys, and Gallup is certainly on this list, where there's going to be guys that we spend time on now that aren't going to make the team in September.
Sure.
And that's actually a good thing because these are names we know, and it tells you that even though there hasn't been major needle movement, there is a little bit more depth to the roster.
Craig, I'm trying to find a way to segue this perfectly because you dropped the nugget with our old pal John Keim. He was knocked off his feet by the analogy as well. Am I a thermostat or a thermometer, my brother?
Oh, God, are you?
Man, when you hit that,
I don't know what you are. I just know we often have to call the HVAC people for you, man. We just like, man, Linnell blew up again.
Oh my God.
The Linnell repair man come through? I don't know what he was. Yeah.
That's a good one, brother. And I love that you were like, hey, look, it's not original, but Kyle said, look, hey, it's great. It's the first time I've heard it. First time I had heard it as well. You used that analogy to describe Laremy Tunsil and how he is going to fit here in Washington. Craig, I've gone back and forth with this. Folks have called me names on social media for whatever reason.
No,
right? Shocker with me, right?
No. Well, shocker on social media. Believe it or not, I get called names there too.
Oh, really? So it's not just me.
You probably more, but it's a social media thing, not a you thing.
Tunsil expected to slide in at left tackle. Before we get to his ultimate impact, I think the Brandon Coleman conversation is an interesting one. I continue to think, and I know John Keim and others have come out and said, yeah, it's likely that he goes to right tackle. Can you explain Washington's thought process behind that, if that's the case? Because I think the upside and where he has the chance to be the best version of himself would be at the guard spot.
I think they saw a lot of stuff they liked last year at tackle. Like if I'm taking the Washington right? I think they saw a lot of stuff they liked, and I don't disagree. He showed a real propensity for a lot of the stuff that you need to do really well at tackle. And I think if they see him and Sam Cosmi long-term as a partnership on the right side, like it's a pretty dangerous partnership. So it's a partnership with tremendous athleticism, really great strength, nastiness. And so if you make that right side of your offensive line just really strong, in the run and the pass in the long term, like you got that locked down. Sweet. Tunsil's hopefully locking down the left side. And then, you know, Biotish and then whoever's at left guard, you can figure that out. I also do wonder if this is a bit of a Brandon Scherff situation where, like, Scherff, oh, he's going to play tackle. He's going to play tackle. He's going to play tackle 2 days in a training camp. Oh, he's a guard.
Yeah.
And so there's always a chance that he gets out there. It's not good. I mean, it's not easy to switch sides. I've never done it, but I have talked to enough people around that, like, it's not.
Especially
at tackle, right? Guard is, you know, you're a little more square to the line of scrimmage. You're moving straight backwards, and whether you're on the left or the right is a little bit different. Because of that kick step at tackle that you need, like the ability to do that off your left foot if you're a right right-sided player, or your right foot if you're a left-sided player, to get that distance, not just the power to be able to do it, but the kind of accuracy and precision that you need to be in the right spot. That is a very, it's not quite going righty to lefty as a baseball hitter, but it's somewhere on that spectrum. And if it doesn't work, then just putting him at guard feels like the right move. But if you can lock down both tackles because you feel like you want Tunsil at the left side for 3-4 years and Coleman, you know, on that for his rookie contract, then you can focus on, you know, doing other things on the interior of your line, maybe spend a little money on a veteran on a guard and you go from there.
It's interesting. One of the more under the radar signings that they brought in was Nate Herbig from Pittsburgh. I actually think he's got a chance to come in here and compete with Nick Allegretti for one of those
for
that starting guard spot, or maybe it's those two come week one if Coleman's ultimately bumped out to the right side. Looking at all of their free agent moves, how would you categorize the work that they've done in the free agent market, Greg?
Good. Real quick, though, I would just so people know, I feel like we left him hanging on the thermostat thermometer thing. With Tunsil, the 15-second version of this is, you know, are you a thermostat or a thermometer as a person? Are you someone who measures the temperature, or are you someone who sets the temperature? And Tunsil seems to be more of a thermometer. He's someone who kind of measures the temperature, which is fine because the temperature in the offensive line room with the Washington Commanders is the right temperature. And so where in Houston, I think they wanted him to be a little bit more of a leader, and he doesn't seem to have that skill as sharp in his bag, if in his bag at all. I don't see that as a problem here. Just like, hey, man, just fit into the culture here. You don't need to do anything extra. So that's the analogy there. Overall, on the free agency, like, I think they've done well. And I think that is relative to the market, right? There weren't, you know, they haven't signed any big names. Well, one, they traded for arguably the biggest name that got moved all offseason in Tunsil. Two, there weren't any big names. Like, the number one free agent on everybody's list was Milton Williams, who's a good football player, but, like, he's Milton Williams. And, like, he's Jalen Carter, his former teammate. And so there were no blue chip guys out there to get. And so I think what they did was very similar to last year. We need guys who can fit roles. And whether that is, okay, Jacob Martin's not going to, he might not make the team, right? But he is a smaller edge player that's got some real pass rush juice, and they're hoping that in their system they can get a little more out of it. Or the big body like an Eddie Goldman on the defensive line, where it's like, okay, we have the versatility now. If we want to play some true 3-4 fronts, we have a guy who can play nose tackle or can play the shade, and we can put Luvu and a guy like Martin or whoever on the edge on the outside. They got some bigger bodies, guys like Kinlaw, who I think can play that elephant end for them, where they used Payne and Allen some last year to, like, have a bigger body on the edge on first and second down to help you out against the run. So they gave themselves options, and those options are better than the ones they had last year on the defensive front specifically. I think they got some good, smart veterans, guys like Herbig, with some potential upside there on the offensive line. He had an injury situation last year that pulled him away from being a starter. And then, you know, filling in the gaps. Gallup is a high upside play, and it doesn't feel like that because he's an older name that you know. But, like, if he hits and he's old Michael Gallup, like, that's one of the best signings of the offseason. Yeah. If he doesn't, he doesn't make the team. Like, okay, you paid him no money. Who cares? You know, they get Noah. They put that floor underneath them. So now going into this draft, would it be amazing if they got a premier edge player at 29? Absolutely. Would it be great if they got a premier corner at 29, a real bona fide starter? Sure. But if the best players on the board is a wide receiver, an offensive lineman, a tight end, if, like, you know, Loveland from Michigan somehow falls to them at 29, you're not in a position where you have to take, or you feel like you have to take a player. You can just see how the board falls and take the best player available.
100%. Joined right now by our pal Craig Hoffman, who you can catch Monday through Friday, 4-7 on the Team 980. You can also check out the Take Command podcast with Craig and Logan Paulson from a Redskins tight end, wherever you get your podcast. Craig, one thing I'm going to ask to the audience when we part ways with you, because that has to happen eventually. I know you've got a busy Saturday ahead of you, my friend, is, and I've kind of been chewing on this myself,
which, and listen closely, right, which second-year commander does the team need to have a stellar sophomore season?
Well, if it's need, the answer is Jaden Daniels.
Outside of Jaden Daniels.
I was about to say, like, what, was this sure, a trick question sure. where you're trying to get you? I go say Mikey Sandersill or Luke McCaffrey. You're like, no, actually, sorry, the correct answer was Jaden. So we go non-Jaden, the most non-obvious. I mean,
like,
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like Newton has to, I mean, he's the second guy off the board, which we almost forget. But they're relying on him for sure. Yeah. Like he's going to have to, he's the primary John Allen replacement. And you're a second round pick. Like they're relying on you to not just be like a good rotational player. We need you to be a high end starter. And so I think he's probably the answer. The more interesting guy to talk about is probably Luke McCaffrey. Dominique Hampton's a really interesting one. Like, I have no idea what his role is going to be, but it feels like he's probably going to have one. And whether it's like a safety who is just really good at run support, or is he playing in the box as a linebacker? What does that allow them to do flexibility wise? But I think, you know, Sinnott is I think probably a lot of people's answer to this. And I think he needs to have the, like, if the answer is for the player, it's Sinnott, because he had a genuinely disappointing first year. Like, Luke was quote unquote disappointing, but he's a borderline fourth round pick.
He gave you some stuff.
Gave you something. He was good on the kick return stuff, and you know, he was stuck behind better players who are veterans that know how to play the position. He's a quarterback in Nebraska 3 years ago.
Yeah.
For Sinnott, you're expecting him to come in, be super consistent with his blocking, give you a little vertical pop on the field, and hopefully learn some of the route running stuff from Zach Ertz to be more effective as an underneath player. And he gave you absolutely none of it. And so if all of a sudden he does not come out and show that he belongs on the field on a consistent basis, like, you're looking at that one as a busted pick versus some of these other guys where you're a little more based off draft position and how their rookie years went, I think willing to give them a little bit more time.
I could totally agree with you. One guy that I think is a wild card in all of this in terms of how much he can grow from year one to year two, Javonte Jean-Baptiste. Like, he hurts his ankle. What was it, in the Bengals game or the Ravens game? One of the two. He gets hurt earlier in the season, and it kind of, I think, hurt his development a little bit. I think he's got the chance to be an every down defensive end. I wonder, Craig, how they view him internally, and what type of shot do you give him to maybe push for one of those starting defensive end spots next year?
I think he's 100% in that rotation. And that's the thing, is like, is he going to be out there first with all these veterans? Probably not. Right. But like, might he wind up playing, you know, most of the snaps that are almost as many snaps as these guys or more? Yeah, I think it's possible. You know, I think Dorrance Armstrong is a lock to be a starter on one side, right? Like, he's the best of that bunch. I know some people thought they wanted more out of him last year, but like, he had a good year. And he's the best of that bunch. Furl is interesting. Dietrich Wise is a good football player. He's a low-key, like, really good signing that they got from the Patriots, a defensive end. I'd say those are probably your two starters now. But can Javonte Jean-Baptiste, one, be more of a third down type of guy that you can get actual pass rush juice from? And two, can he develop as a run defender to be a go-to guy on first and second down? I think it's a fascinating question. And then, like, what happens, you know, when you're the rookie, you're the bell of the ball. They could take another guy in the seventh round this year, too. And then, like, what happens to that guy? So, you know, Andre Jones is still floating around in the background. He was on practice squad last year. So, like, it's a very interesting group of defensive ends. And they've got, I think, again, you know, to reiterate what I said earlier, Linnell, like, a bunch of good options. And a lot of those options are different body types with different skill sets. And so it's going to be up to DQ and Daryl Tapp, their defensive line coach, and obviously Joe Witt Jr., their D coordinator, to find out what the right mix of skills is to get the best room to have the most effective defense. And he's got a pretty varied skill set in theory,
right,
if that can come alive in the spring and then ultimately in training camp.
That's interesting you brought up Andre Jones. He still just looks like your prototypical defensive end in this league. So you always,
he's a good teams player too. Like, he's fast. He goes down and tackles on special teams. So like, that gets you a roster spot potentially at the end versus a guy who doesn't do that stuff well.
One other thing that can help this pass rush, Craig, is if Jordan McGee is able to come on and take some of the linebacker responsibility away from Luvu, would that allow him to be more of a rusher? What are you expecting and what are you hoping for from Jordan in year two?
So I actually wonder how he is in that rusher spot. He did a little bit of that in college, if I'm remembering correctly. The thing about Luvu is, and Logan and I have talked about this, like, he was incredibly effective as a blitzer, I actually didn't like him that much as a rush end. Like, I don't think he actually gave you a ton there. Like, he runs really hard into, and he plays hard always. Like, Frankie's a maniac. But, like, he runs really hard into the chest of a left tackle.
Still.
Doesn't really get much further than that. And so, like, if he can become more effective and he spends the offseason, like, doing some pass rush stuff and can get better with his hands, you know, but he's just a smaller guy. Like, he's not as big as Micah. And, you know, obviously you're talking about that Micah role. Now, can you get him in some different spots matchup-wise and use his quickness? Yes. But I think he was most effective, like, kind of coming from off the ball, timing things up, playing off of other guys' picks, stunts, that kind of stuff, versus, oh, yeah, it's third and 12. It's pass rush situation. We're going to find the fish, find the worst offensive lineman, and line Frankie Louvu up over in the way that we did in Dallas with Micah Parsons. Like, I'd rather have two or three other guys on this team, Daron Payne, Johnny Newton, Dorrance Armstrong, frankly. Like, I'd rather have those guys on the fish than I would Frankie Louvu based off how last year alone went.
For sure. Craig, we'll let you go on this, my friend. The secondary to me is super interesting, and I actually really like the mix of guys that they have in there, because there's just no way, and you were out there every day too, Craig, there's no way that Tyler Owens, to me, doesn't develop into a good football player for them. I think he's just got it from a height, weight, speed standpoint. He's physical. Loved him on teams last year. Do you think he can push Will Harris for that other safety job?
Can he? Yes. But I hate being like the cold blanket or the wet blanket, the cold water on the Tyler Owens thing, because I think Tyler Owens' special teamers really special. Like that he potential future all pro special teams player. He's height, weight, speed, physicality, recklessness that you need to play special teams. Like, he's got all of it. But that's very different than playing safety.
Yes.
Like, safety is such a cerebral position. And I'm not saying Tyler Owens is a dummy by any means. I've never talked to the kid. But I do know, watching him in camp last year, like, there's times where it's clear that the NFL game's moving a little fast for him at safety, which is why he was an undrafted free agent. That's perfectly fine for him. The fact that he was such a demon on special teams is remarkable in terms of the success of an undrafted free agent in year one. And he was around really smart guys in that room and really good secondary coaches for an entire year, redshirting almost on defense. So what does he come back with in year two? There's a chance we get out there this spring and he's out there flying around with the second teamers and he and Jeremy Reeves are doing a great job. And you're like, man, maybe this guy needs to get some snaps. Maybe it's just packages to start, but can he ultimately be a long-term guy at safety? It's very, very possible. He's got all the physical tools. And from what I know about him as a kid, like, he seems like a really smart, good kid in all the ways that they love, you know, those characteristics and traits. But it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, reading coverages, understanding space, the speed at which that all happens in the back end of an NFL secondary is intense. And so if he just winds up being a special teamer, that's fine. He was an undrafted free agent. That's still a remarkable long-term success if he carves a 10-year career out being a Jeremy Reeves, a Matthew Slater, like these elite special teams guys, or even something less than elite, a good special teams player. But to think like, oh, he's great on teams, will that apply to safety? That is a step that you make if you want to tell me about how great of a safety Troy Apke is going to be or many of the other failed, very, very, very good special teams players that just cannot do the processing on the back end of a defense.
Yeah, to Owens' credit, him being a ball magnet last camp is what I think drew a lot of people to him. So,
yeah, I'm intrigued. Like, I'm not saying he's Troy Apke. He's way better than Troy Apke. Yeah. Trapp was a good special teams player, but, like, very, very different player as a defensive back. And there were flashes, but it wasn't consistent enough to think, like, oh, yeah, he's going to be ready next year. But if he's ready in year three, year four, like, that would also be sick. He's an undrafted free agent. Right. If you eventually turn that guy into a starter and he's really productive to you on that path because of what he does on teams, like, again, that is a success story.
It's the DQ special, where they did it with a couple of different guys in Dallas. I wonder what type of shot he has to be one of those cats.
Craig, we
appreciate you as always, my friend. Always love catching up with my guy, Craig Hoffman. Make sure you check out the Hoffman Show weekdays 4 to 7 on the Team 980, as well as the Take Command podcast with former Redskins tight end Logan Paulson. You can download that wherever you get your podcast. That's going to do it, though, here for this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. Big shout out to Kevin Sheehan for joining the program. Thank you to Craig Hoffman for joining the program. Thank you to Ryan Fowler for joining the program. Thank you to my guy Toby Altizer riding shotgun with me and answering your calls. The Infinity Sports Network comes your way next.